Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. I'm Trevor Lane. He's Jason Tipp. Jovan Buha is traveling today. I'm going to come on and talk about some of the Lakers role players, what the future is going to look like with them, and of course, take some of your questions and comments from the chat. If you haven't done so yet, please make sure you hit the subscribe button, turn on those notifications as well, and follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Jason, happy to see you here. Hopefully, you're feeling a bit better. How are you doing, my friend?
A little better each day. My fever was only 99.8 last night, which for me is like a huge win compared to what I've been dealing with. I did a shooting workout earlier today, and like just my regular shooting workout that I normally do on like my off days. So I'm a super regimented basketball player. I know it's super lame for somebody who's 34, but it's just the way that I'm wired. And like, so I do these same drills like every single day, but I have like a lighter set that I do when I'm really trying to take a day off. And I just tried that as like a ramp up today. And I was huffing and puffing like you wouldn't believe, like it was crazy. So, but I told my wife, I was like, it's baby steps. I'm starting from ground zero. Just need to build back up. Before we get into some Lakers stuff, I wanted to ask your take on the finals. Who'd you end up picking? And what'd you think about last night's game?
I picked Knicks in seven, and that is my hope that the basketball gods do bless us with a seven game series. I thought game one was a lot of fun. I thought the runs in the fourth quarter were insane. We saw the Knicks go on a scoring drought from this about the 6 minute mark to the 2 minute mark, and then the Spurs go on a scoring drought to close out the entire game. But I thought in general we followed a kind of similar structure to the OKC and Spurs series, where the team that played ultimately with the most force wound up winning the game. And certainly in the second half, I thought the Knicks played with more force. And I thought a lot of the conversation around rust versus rest, I thought we saw a bit of rust from the Knicks in the first half. And in the second half, that was where the fatigue factor kicked in for the Spurs. I thought Wemby in particular started really tire out down the stretch. I think there's some things that the Spurs can change without going too in-depth or anything. I think there's certainly some adjustments they can make, some rotation adjustments. Needed more Dylan Harper, maybe a little bit less De'Aaron Fox. I don't think it's all his fault. He's dealing with a high ankle sprain that tends to sap your athleticism quite a bit. Wemby, I thought, was a little too aggressive defending Towns on the perimeter, needed to sag off a little bit more. I think the Spurs are going to bounce back in a big, big way in game two. But I also thought that maybe for the first time in the playoffs, the Spurs had moments where they looked like the younger team as opposed to the way they looked in the series against the Thunder. So I give a lot of credit to the Knicks fighting through. I didn't think they played their best game either. I think they can get better. But the big takeaway from game one is I'm more excited than ever for this series because I think we're going to get an awesome and pretty long series here. I'm expecting this to be a back and forth affair all the way through.
Man, I hope so. I'm a little worried. I don't think the Knicks are going to sweep them, but like for a second, that dark thought entered my mind last night as I was watching. I was like, oh no, because I hate the matchup for the Knicks on so many different levels. Like I did my film session this morning and Karl Anthony Towns was the guy that really screamed off the film for me as like, just the kind of like breaking point for this matchup in the sense that no one on the team can guard him other than Wemby, and Wemby hasn't been guarding him well. So it's kind of like this funky dynamic where wherever he is on the floor, he seems to have some sort of pretty substantial advantage. And on the other end of the floor, I didn't like much of anything that they were generating in the half court. So it was definitely a pretty concerning game one. I think though, Wemby up here is wired as well as any superstar that we've had in the last 15, 20 years. And I just think he's going to come out and have an unbelievable game in game two and send this thing back to New York 1-1. I'm with you, though. I picked the Knicks in six, and that's kind of where I'm landing right now. I think they'll probably win the three games at MSG to close this thing out. But I'm just hoping for an entertaining long series. Anyway, I didn't want to take us too far off the rails. I just was curious your thoughts.
No, it was. I thought it was a really fun game one, and I'm expecting like just a badass Wemby game two. I think that's coming. Yeah. It's the question is how many times in the series can he do it? Because that's what it's going to take, I think, to beat the Knicks, to get wins over New York. By the way, shout out to former Laker Josh Hart, 6'4", 6'5", 15 rebounds. What a great performance. Talk about 3 points. Talk about not really scoring the ball and still making a huge impact on that game. 5 stocks and 15 rebounds, plus he chipped in 6 assists. He was awesome.
He's such a monster, man. He's like... He is. Having just scrappers and motor guys and culture setters, it's such an underrated thing. We talked about this a little bit yesterday when we were talking Marcus Smart. Like, even if you let Marcus go regardless of what direction you go this offseason, you just need culture setters, high motor guys, guys who set the tone on a possession-to-possession basis. There's a lot of pressure to maintain the kind of ascending culture of Lakers basketball.
All right, let's get into some of our Lakers conversation here. I know we've got, obviously, what we hope is a great NBA Finals, but the Lakers, they're going to be assembling their roster very, very soon. In fact, if you know the NBA, you know that tampering never, ever, ever, ever happens. But most likely right now behind the scenes, some of the maneuvering is already happening in order to assemble next year's Lakers roster. We'll talk about some of the players, whether or not they should be coming back, and ultimately what letter grades we should give them. There's a few key role players that we're going to talk about here today. We'll also kind of sum up a number of them. But let's start with a guy that I think is fairly controversial amongst Lakers fans, and that's Jared Vanderbilt. There's a lot of fans that love Vando and think he should be playing a lot more. There's a lot of fans that don't and look at his contract and say this is a albatross contract and he needs to be moved off the roster. Where did you actually land on Jared Vanderbilt? And did you see the image going around that Vando put out there on social media, the close-up shot of his finger dislocated with the bone popping
out?
No,
I didn't.
Oh, I'll have to send it to you.
You need to text that to me. I want to see it. But I landed at a C- for Jared, and it really comes down to a couple things. First of all, he's in the conversation we were having surrounding kind of salary slot value, he's just occupying one of those double digit salaries, which at that point you're expecting a certain amount of impact on both ends of the floor. There were strides this year in some ways. Like, he certainly was a more confident and willing 3-point shooter this year than he ever has been as a Laker. And that had, there were games where he hit a couple of threes and that just felt like found money, and it certainly added to his impact. But there just was this super uneven result that came with the Vanderbilt experience where, like, you know, he had the ability to play in the open floor a little bit, and he had his moments with LeBron, you know, especially in those units with both Luka and Austin off the floor. But then the flip side of that is you'd have moments where he'd do too much off the bounce. He'd overpenetrate, or he'd on offense struggle to catch and finish in traffic, or he'd have a game where he wasn't making that corner three. And, like, even with the corner three, he kind of had to be, like, really open for him to even feel comfortable taking it. And then on defense, like, while Vanderbilt is arguably the most talented defender on the team in terms of just his natural gifts as, like, this, like, 6'9 rangy athlete with good lateral quickness and strength and all that stuff, he's a very mistake-prone defender. He's a defender that will, you know, commit silly fouls, that will get himself out of position. Oh, my God, dude, that is
gnarly. Did you just get it? That's so bad.
That is so bad.
Oh, how did man. He play like 4 days later, whatever it was?
I don't know, man. That is pretty disgusting. But anyway, yeah, I just thought it was an uneven year, just with a lot of good, but a lot of bad that undercut the good. And it's kind of like the defensive and rebounding role player version of Russell Westbrook, where every Jared Vanderbilt game was like, are we getting 5 good Jared plays and 2 bad Jared plays, or are we getting 2 good Jared plays and 5 bad Jared plays? And like, it just was a kind of a wild oscillating back and forth experience. And I, you know, I look forward, like, as much as I, you know, there were times where I enjoyed rooting for Jared, and he certainly had his moments in a Lakers jersey. Like, I just, right now, he just seems like something that's weighing down the team.
Yeah, it's the, when we talk about, well, how do the Lakers have Austin Reeves on such a below market value contract and still not have depth? How are you not able to capitalize? Like, you look at San Antonio, for example, right? And they've got Wemby on a below market value contract, and they've got a number of guys on that contract, and that has given them the ability to add other pieces to their roster. Why do the Lakers not have more depth? Part of that is because that benefit of having Austin Reeves on the contract they did was essentially erased by Jared Vanderbilt's contract, by Maxi Kleba's contract, by Gabe Vincent's contract, until he became Luke Kennard. And we'll talk a bit about Luke later on in the show. But Jared Vanderbilt, his contract is definitely holding back the Lakers. If he were on a veteran minimum salary, this would be a different story. But this is the contract the Lakers chose to give him. He's at about $12 million, and he has a player option for next year. 2 years left on his deal, coming in at about $25 million. So I think the Lakers will do what they can to try to move on from him. I think he is still a good defensive player. I guess two questions for you, Jason. What's the bigger concern? Is it his 3-point shooting or his lack of finishing at the rim? And then is there hope that on a different team, because I think he is out in terms of J.J. Redick and his belief in him, is there hope that on a different team he could revitalize his career?
I think it's with the offense stuff, it's the ability to, we talked about this with Rui. Rui is not necessarily a gifted processor, a gifted finisher in under traffic duress around the basket, a guy that is, you know, putting the ball on the floor and making a bunch of things happen off the bounce, but he just makes every damn open shot he takes and he can rack a closeout and hit a one dribble pull up. Right. So like, I don't think the inability to make a shot is why Vando is a bad offensive player. I think if he could make a shot, it's his best pathway to become a useful offensive player. Like him, because I think so much of that read and react, put the ball on the floor in the middle of the floor, finish in traffic, so much of that has to do with like natural ability, like natural feel, natural touch, natural like kind of like processing ability in the middle of the floor. So much of that is like you just kind of have it or you don't, and Vando doesn't. And so I think that is really what makes him a limited offensive player. It's just the version of Vando that is either playable for the Lakers next year or is playable for somebody else in the future is a guy that hits 40% of his corner threes, because that's the one thing that like it removes any of that kind of up and down nature of his play in the middle of the floor and turns him into like a make or miss guy. And if he makes enough of them, like again, we talked about with Rui, Rui's a totally different level of a shooter, but like Rui has made himself an extremely useful offensive player based on basically one trait with one counter. And I don't even think Vando necessarily needs a counter because of how good he is defensively when he's, you know, dialed in and not making mistakes. But like, I think that like, that three-point shot is just his most realistic pathway to being a playable player for a really good team.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's going to be the challenge. Can he knock that down with regularity? We saw him work on it a bunch last summer, but obviously did not necessarily translate here into the regular season. I believe he's 29% from three on the season. All right, let's get into – oh, here's a super chat question specifically about Vando. Would you trade Vando and Dalton Connect for Christian Brown? Knowing that he's got four more years on his deal, right?
Let me look at Brown's contract one last time. And
Brown, I've got that off the jump here. Christian Brown, he's at $21.5 million this season. So Vando and Connect combined are about 16. So you're taking on an extra about $5 million in salary, but he's also under contract through the 2030-2031 season
at $28 million.
Yep.
Good God. Am I getting a pick back too?
Right. That's a lot of money, man, to take on. And Brown was not great for the Nuggets. Also, there could be a domino effect here where that is step one. It doesn't clear enough salary, but that could be step one towards the Denver Nuggets keeping Peyton Watson. If I'm taking a player from Denver to help them keep Peyton Watson, I want it to be Cam Johnson.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's got to be Cam Johnson. Yeah, it's a fascinating trade because the other way to look at that, so let's just be really like straightforward. Christian Brown would come in and probably start at the three for the Lakers.
Sure.
So is he overpaid? Yes. Is he flawed? Yes. Does he probably start at the three? Yes. So the upside to that kind of deal is you're turning a bad contract out of your rotation player into a bad contract starting player, right? But it's and the other thing too is like I don't think Christian Brown is going to be worth anywhere close to his salary in the future, but I do think Christian Brown is a better basketball player than he looked at the end of the season. He was coming off of that injury. He had a brutal shooting stretch. I do think he's better than he looked. But ultimately, do I think I'd be willing to tie my cap sheet up with all that money? The answer is no.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm at as well. It's just, if you told me it was a three-year deal, okay, that's a little more palatable, but 5 years left on this deal, I mean, that's just a long time to commit to a player. For as much as we've been talking about, man, How much longer is Vando's contract going for? How soon can you get that money off the books? There's a world where you're spending the next 5 years talking about when Christian Brown's contract comes to an end. I don't want to turn him into the next, like, Luol Deng. Hey, Luol Deng's money finally came off the books for the Lakers. There's a world where he outplays it, but I think it's more likely that he underperforms on the deal that he's on right now. So I would not wind up doing that. Since you just got brought up, let's talk real quick about Dalton Connect. Maybe it was just because I knew this show was coming. Last night, I went and I looked up Dalton Connect. I was like, you know what? Let me watch some Dalton Connect highlights from the beginning of last season when he was pretty good. And there's a game where he dropped 20 straight on the Suns. There's, of course, he had that big game against the Utah Jazz. And I'm watching it, and I'm just going, oh my God, it really is night and day. Like, we haven't seen this guy in over a year. It's one of the more baffling complete fall-offs that we've seen from a young player in terms of the way he plays, the way he moves on the floor. His confidence level is so different. Where are you at on Dalton Connect? Is there any hope he gets back to the dude that we saw a year and a half ago?
I don't think so. I was never super high on Dalton. Like, there were times when he was a rookie where I was like, oh, he brings a certain element of like open floor athleticism, the ability to win some contested rebound battles, this kind of like flamethrower, get hot 3-point shooting thing. But there wasn't a lot of like night to night sustainable traits with his game that really appealed to me. And then flat out, I mean, we've just seen the opposite of improvement with him. He's just gotten worse as the years have gone by. So like, the thing that's tricky with Dalton is if he has no value to anyone else in the league, like if you can't trade him and get something of value back, there's literally no point in trading him because he makes such a small salary slot that at this point, just betting that maybe he turns into something is worth more than just letting him walk for nothing at his salary slot. So unless there's a team out there that goes, I want Dalton to do this deal, to me, he's a Laker for the next couple of years. And at that point, it's on Dalton to prove whether or not he can actually play in this league. And I'm skeptical. I personally would be shocked. But at this point, I don't really see any universe where you just dump him for the sake of dumping him. I like, his salary slot is too low to get any real upside there. Do you think the Lakers just don't pick up his team option?
That's where I was going to go. I think he's at 4.2 million. I think if you gave the Lakers truth serum and they could go and said, if you could go back in time and not pick up his option for this year, would you? I think they would not have picked up the option even at 4.2 million. I think if they could have moved him at the trade deadline, they would have. And his value has fallen so far that nobody even wanted him at 4.2 million. I think if things don't drastically improve, they're declining that team option next year at $6.4, almost $6.5 million. That's not a lot of money. You're right. That salary slot is not a lot. But like, you had to go get Nick Smith and Kobe Bufkin and guys like that to play in front of him. He had his opportunities to play his way into minutes. J.J. Redick gave him the shot, and he just couldn't get there. I mean, there were multiple moments where J.J. was frustrated with him for not knowing where he was supposed to be out there on the floor. It's a frustrating fall that we've seen from him. I do think he may need a change of scenery even more than the Lakers need to move on from him. But right now, he's one of those guys that has taken up a roster spot that is not really playable in an NBA game. I hope somehow he finds his mojo again. By the way, I've been saying this a lot. I would play him in Summer League if he's still a Laker come Summer League. I know it'd be his third season. He's got to get out on the court as much as he can and try to figure things out. I would play him in Summer League again, see if you can get him back on the court, get him back into some kind of a rhythm. But if things don't drastically improve, I think they're either going to dump him as an expiring contract if they can and see if there's another team that wants to try to rediscover what he lost, or they decline that team option and that's where it is. And he just expires at 4.2 million on the Lakers books. It's crazy. You know, he was the 17th pick, and back-to-back 17th pick misses in a row is really unfortunate, but defensively he's not there. And I just, like, we'll talk about Bronny James in a bit. Think about how much better Bronny James is when he came into the league compared to where he is now. And I don't know that he's going to be a rotation player, but if we saw that kind of growth from Dalton, this would be a completely different conversation. I don't think he's any better right now than he was when he came into the NBA. And that's incredibly frustrating.
Yeah. You know, it's just bizarre. And like, the word is that he's great with his work ethic, like that he puts in the work. But then I've also heard that, like, I had heard coming into the draft that he also wasn't the brightest crayon in the box. And that has a certain amount of impact in, like, things like your just ability to play basketball with other smart players and figure things out on the fly and just kind of be a grown-up out there on the court, you know? And so it's weird. Like, I wonder how much that specifically is getting in the way of his development. If it's less about necessarily his raw natural scoring traits, like his jump shot or his athleticism mm-hmm. and his size, and more just like it's difficult for him to connect those things to real life basketball situations.
That's fair. You know, you go look at like his, you go back into like his draft combine workouts and stuff, and like his athleticism numbers all jump off the screen. But obviously he was not able to put it all together. Jovan checking in. Miss you too, buddy. Hope your trip's going well. And we'll be seeing you next week.
Miss you, Jovan.
I hope that Dalton can sort some things out this summer. I think out of the whole debacle with the trade with the Hornets, I think Dalton Connect was the guy who was injured the most in that situation. I'm not blaming that for, you know, taking his confidence. He had some big games post-trade. I do think that he was already on this downward slide, but I think he would be in a much better situation if you were in Charlotte or if you were just about anywhere else other than the Lakers. It does seem like the spotlight is a lot for him. I don't know that he's ever going to figure it out, and unfortunately, I just think it may be too wasted picks in a row for the Lakers.
The one thing is, it literally can't get any worse than it was this year. So
true.
Like, if there's one thing, it's like, if there's like the, oh, is he going to crumble under the pressure of being in LA? Well, he already did. So maybe at this point, it's like he's playing with house money, and maybe that allows him to hit some shots next year.
Diego said, I still believe in Dalton Connect's talent. Doesn't go away, but confidence can. Peyton Pritchard, a similar start to his career. Peyton Pritchard's a completely different level of ball handler and shot creator, though. That Dalton Connect is not a guy that can create his own shot in any meaningful way right now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that never really was enough of part of his game. Like, he could, in certain types of scoring actions where he's curling over the top of screens and a defender's in his sidecar, he can bump him off because he does have the size, but he's never really had wiggle in his game or any of that, like, kind of improvisational scoring. He's a catch and shoot guy.
So let's move on and let's talk about Luke Kennard. And by the way, I guess did we give a grade for Kennard? I mean, mine's just, it's an F.
It's got to be an F. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a first round pick that just hasn't been able to play.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk Luke Kennard. So the Lakers at the trade deadline, they trade Gabe Vincent, second round pick for Luke Kennard. At the time when the trade went down, I thought, okay, why? Is he really going to move the needle for you and change anything about your playoff run or anything like that for Luke Kennard? I get the need for shooting, but is this just kind of throwing away a second round pick? Now I look at it and say, I don't know that they get out of the first round without him. He was that good in game one and game two against the Houston Rockets. Obviously dropped off after that. Legitimately the best three-point shooter in the NBA. Sometimes a little bit too selective with the shooting, but in terms of athleticism, not really a fit with Luka in that regard. How do you view Luke Kennard's stint with the Lakers, and what does the future hold? Has he found now a long-term home in LA as a guy who's bounced around the league a lot, or do you think he winds up elsewhere this summer?
So I give him an A-. There's got to be a certain amount of when you trade a second-round pick for a guy at the deadline and you send out a player who essentially was who was not performing well for you. So you turn a frustrating rotation player into a guy who immediately came in and was an immediate useful player in the rotation, whether it was the catch and shoot reliability, if it was the kind of driving closeouts, getting the defense in the blender through multiple attacks on possessions kind of element to the game, the way he kind of naturally mixed with the Lakers stars, the way he scaled up his ball handling role in the Houston Rockets series and helped them win a playoff series. Like, when you make a smaller role player trade at the deadline and you don't give up a first round pick and you send out a frustrating rotation player and you get that back, that type of production, I don't see any way you can characterize that other than as a success story. Mm-hmm. I do think that it gets a little bit tricky. You know, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, so I don't want to dive too much further into it. I actually want to use it to kind of bump into the Bronny topic a little bit here.
Sure.
Bronny had a little bit of this in the Rockets series where he would just catch and rip and just go screaming downhill into the lane, either on the baseline or in towards the middle. And he would just make the next read. And it would generate like an open shot for Rui or an open drop off for DeAndre Ayton. And I was sitting there thinking, like, I wonder if Bronny can bring a little bit of that Luke Kennard, get the defense in the blender just through racking closeouts. Obviously, Bronny's not a Luke Kennard level shooter, although Bronny shot the ball well last year. He deserves some credit for that. And we'll talk about him in a minute. But like, I just think a lot of what Luke Kennard brings to the table is somewhat replaceable. And so the conversation about bringing him back, it comes back to that conversation we had yesterday where it all depends on what the trade-off is. If I feel like I can get him back and it's, you know, somewhere around $8 to $10 million a year and it's without me having to lose a different rotation player that I prefer, then I'm okay with it. I just think it gets a little tricky if you're like, oh, we're getting Luke, but we're losing Marcus in the process or something along those lines.
Yeah. Yeah. The context of the opportunity cost of the situation certainly matters when we're looking at Luke Kennard. I do think, you know, JJ talked about the need to find players who can dribble, pass, shoot, and that's certainly what Luke Kennard can do. I would love to bring him back on the right deal. I do think he could wind up being the guy that gets squeezed, that winds up being a cap casualty for the Lakers, especially if we're talking about that, that room exception. If they're a below the cap team, that $9 million, I would like to see Marcus Smart come back on that. Maybe he gets more than that. If Marcus Smart takes that room exception, I think that's probably the slot that otherwise I'd be putting Luke Kennard in. So that gets a little bit complicated there, trying to bring him back. Again, you always want good shooters around Luka, but the athleticism deficit is a real one. You mentioned Bronny. Could it be that Bronny slots into that role? I mean, that kid is there's a lot of people, I see this discourse across social media, that I don't think have quite caught up to the growth that he's made over the last 2 years to where he is today as a player. I think he is much, I'm not ready to say he's a rotation player. He is way closer to being a rotation player right now, though, than he was 2 years ago. His growth has been real. It's been significant. You mentioned the shooting. They've worked a lot on the passing, the ball handling, all of that. He still has a ways to go. But where are you at on Bronny? And by the way, I concur with an A- for Luke Kennard. Where are you at on Bronny and his future with the Lakers? And maybe we'll finish up with, if LeBron leaves, does Bronny also leave? We'll get into that. But where are you at on Bronny James, his development, and what you see from him moving forward here?
So for a guy to make $1.9 million, who was out of the rotation for much of the year, as many second round picks that are 21 years old are, to then come in and be a useful rotation piece and have a big part in a pivotal run during a swing game of a playoff series like game three in Houston. I think you have to be impressed by like just the poise and the kind of like not scared of the moment type of performances that you got from Bronny in that Rocket series. I think it gets a little bit complicated when you start talking about the grade, because it's like, yes, he was a second round pick, but he's a second round pick on a guaranteed contract that took up a roster spot that had something to do with a guy like Jordan Goodwin being let go. So like there's complications there that make it a little bit tricky. I'm hesitant to put that on Bronny himself. And it's difficult to give him a real like player grade, because the truth of the matter is he was not in the rotation for the vast majority of the year. Mm-hmm. But like, am I impressed by what he did being able to play in the Rocket series? Yes. But like, he's the first role player we're talking about now, other than Dalton, who like frankly just wasn't in the rotation when the team was playing. Now, one of the things that I think is fascinating with Bronny, you mentioned, I'm not sure he's a rotation player yet. Me neither. But I do think he showed enough that he's officially in the we need to invest in him to see if he is. And what I mean by that is like he needs to be in that like extended 10-11 man rotation to start next season, where kind of like the way that OKC will, where OKC just finds a way to make sure that their top 12 guys all have opportunities at least once a week to play for one reason or another. You know, and I just think Bronny needs to be getting a lot more consistent, like real minutes now, even if it's on the lower end, even if it's just one shift a game, whatever it might be. I think he's worth the investment because he brings an element of speed, and he had flashed some reliable catch and shoot shooting. He showed a transition burst. I thought he improved defensively over the course of this season as well. Mm-hmm. Like Bronny's starting to flash some improvements in some key areas that frankly are areas this team needs help. So at this point, I think he's actually worth the investment. Like, I think he is frankly closer to being a useful rotation player for the Lakers than Adu Thierro is.
What has you, I think Adu Thierro has physical gifts that Bronny doesn't. You think Bronny's feel for the game has gotten to a different level than where Adu Thierro is currently at?
I think Adu Thierro is incredibly raw, like incredibly sure. raw. Like I understand Lakers fans, and there's a case that like should Adu have been given more of a long leash this year to play just because of the development trajectory he's on. Sure. Although I think Adu's own injuries affected that more than people think this year. There were a lot of nights that Adu was just like on the injury report this season, you know, but like, to me, like that like catch and shoot, catch and rip, make the next decision on the closeout. That's where Bronny is just miles ahead of Adu right now.
How do you compare the two in terms of ceiling?
Of course, Adu's ceiling is okay. higher.
Because I think that's where most Lakers fans will push back, because they'll see Adu Thierro's ceiling and hear what you're not saying in what you're saying right now.
Adu, when you make a pick for a guy like Adu Thierro, you are not making a pick for a guy who's going to be playing in your rotation in the first couple of years. This is like when the Warriors drafted Jonathan Kuminga. And Kuminga, by the way, is a much better prospect than Adu was.
Sure.
When you draft for upside, you have the upside, but you got to wait for it. And there's no guarantee that the upside's going to be there. And like that's where like I always feel like Rob Pelinka is drafting off of this like bizarre feel. And I think he literally drafted Adu because of all the complaints about athleticism. And I get it. You have people complaining about athleticism. You need athleticism. Adu is an athlete. And there's no doubt that that upside exists there. But the truth of the matter is you are in a win-now situation with a Luka Doncic. And at the time of the Adu Thierro pick, a LeBron James that had multiple years left. And he may still have multiple years left. You need to be drafting players that you think can play, like soon.
And, well, isn't that what led you to drafting Dalton Connect, though, who's older, and that's why he slipped in the draft?
Yeah, Dalton is just a miss. It's not necessarily that he went for the wrong type of guy. It was just a miss. Okay. The question is like. At a certain point, you're drafting for upside or you're drafting for fit right away. And Adu, to me, was an upside draft pick that very clearly, from the minute you watch the tape, you're like, oh, yeah, like 4 or 5 years from now, this dude could be a monster. And it's just, what does that do for you when you've got Luka Doncic on the roster right now?
I think that's fair. And if that's, I would lean more towards, well, if you're talking about you need to win right now, then what are you looking to do to potentially trade the pick rather than, unless you feel like you have somebody who is legitimately like, this dude is plug and play out of the draft, ready to go. And maybe that would have been the case.
Dudes like exist. Ryan, Boston just got two of them in a row.
Exactly. I'm saying like had Ryan Kalkbrenner slip. There was a rumor out there right before the Lakers took Adu Thierro that they were going to take Kalkbrenner. And that was the target. And what was it, 36 or 37, as I recall, is where they got Adu. Yeah. And Kalkbrenner, I think, went 32, something like that. Like, that was going to be the plan. So maybe there would have been somebody there. But my counter would be, I thought, if you're going to gamble on somebody in the draft, I was at least happy to see the Lakers gambling on a wing, on somebody with size, on somebody that's at a different level athletically. That was the type of player that we've seen too often not leaned into, that we've seen the smallish combo guards generally for years, not just in the draft, but in free agency as well. I was just happy, hey, they're going after a wing player that in theory, if he does end up hitting, could be a guy who would fit really well with his athleticism with Luka Doncic. I do agree, though, that it's going to take him time. This is a big summer for Adu Thiro. He's going to have to take massive strides. He didn't get a summer last year, didn't get an offseason, didn't get training camp, didn't get preseason. And to your point, he also didn't get to play a lot this season because he got banged up during the regular season as well. I agree that he's got a ways to go, but I wasn't upset with the pick just because we saw stylistically a type of player that I think this team has been needing for quite a while. So if you're going to invest into something, at least it's something that is a skill set that the team needs. And frankly, when we're talking about value, I think it's also a skill set that has the potential to become very valuable around the NBA, right? Finding wings with athleticism that can play both sides of the ball, that's one of the most valuable archetypes of role players that you can have. So if you're going to invest in something, a draft pick in something, I was happy to see them go that direction. But I do get your point about him not being necessarily plug and play and ready to go immediately as well.
Yeah, I also think that each situation is unique. And if you're picking in the early second round, it's harder to find that type of guy that can play for you relatively soon. I mean, it does happen. Like, you know, the guy that sticks out to me is Jordan Walsh in Boston as like an early second round pick that was able to play right away. But like, it is relatively rare to find somebody there. My thing is, like, let's just call it what it is. Like, Adu Thiro was a long-term upside pick. And if you take a long-term upside pick, don't be surprised when you're playing with a Luka Doncic team that's trying to win the title that he's not in the rotation for JJ Redick. Like, what do you expect? That's my whole, like, mismatch between the kind of direction that the team is going and some of the complaints that I hear, where I'm like, I there was not a single time this year that I was like, man, they need more Adu Thiro, because like I was just sitting there thinking like, Adu's an enticing young athlete, but he's just so far away from being able to play serious basketball with this group. And so again, he'll continue to develop behind the scenes, and you know, maybe at the end of this next year, he'll be able to play a little bit. And then maybe in 2028, he's the eighth or ninth man in the rotation. But like, let's call it what it is. When you draft for upside, you're drafting for long-term upside. You're not drafting for a guy who's got like, hey, this dude doesn't have the long-term upside, but right now he's really good at defending guards. So like right now, I feel like if we needed to have him play for us, you know, two shifts, 25 games a year when a dude's out with an injury, he can slot in and play because he has this one NBA level trait right now. You know, with a dude, like, he's not actually good at anything yet. He just has the raw athleticism. That him getting good at stuff as the years go by will make him useful. Yeah, like, yeah, transition dunks or wide open cuts, sure. But like, he's not a good shooter. He's not a good ball handler. He's not a good perimeter defender. He's not a good off ball defender. You know, you can go get a contested rebound. But, like, there is a certain – let's just call it what it is. It was a long-term upside pick, and so I thought it was ridiculous that people were expecting him to be playing this year.
I think that it is a potential real point of friction with Lakers fans and the decision-making of the coaching staff centered around Adu Thiro. Because I think there's an element of Adu where what he does well, or what when he flashes, it's very, very impressive, right? And yeah, people are going to find that. They're going to latch onto that. Whereas what he does poorly are things that are not nearly as loud, are things that are much easier to miss.
This is the Kuminga, like, thing, Trevor.
Exactly.
He'd have 20 points and five dunks, and everybody'd be like, why isn't he starting? And it's like, because if you watch the film, it's like he's stopping the offense. He's making mistakes in off-ball defense. He'll jack up a mid-range jump shot when the team's on a run. Like, there was reasons that were, like, the way you put it is perfect. That stuff is harder to see.
And that's where, because the things that he does well are loud when he throws down that dunk, that's where you're going to get a lot of people saying he needs to be playing more. He needs to get in there. Look, he just jumped over everybody. You need more guys who can do that. I hope he develops a lot this summer. I hope he takes a big step forward. I think that's going to be important. But I also want to go back to something you're saying about him, about Rob Palenka and his drafting being a little bit reactionary. You kind of see that, right? Like, who was it that fell when they took Jalen Hood Schifino? It was, Cam Whitmore, right?
Oh, yeah.
Fell in the draft. And everybody was all fired up about the Lakers. And obviously, he hasn't really worked out necessarily either. But it's been, oh, the Lakers should have taken Cam Whitmore. They take Jalen Hinchcliffe. That doesn't work. Okay, next year, Dalton Kincaid falls. Well, shit, we're not going to do that again. Let's take the dude who falls, right? That didn't work. Okay, this year, we're going to turn things around and we're going to go get a dude there. We're just going to lean into athleticism. There is a little bit of that reactionary response here. So maybe that means then this year, if they keep their 25th pick in the draft, it's going to be, let's take a guy, let's take a four-year senior that's plug and play. Let's find our, I don't know, like when they got Josh Hart, say years ago, who I already talked about on the show, let's get the guy that we think is a little bit older, but can plug in right away. Maybe that's the path they take as a reaction to what they went with last year in terms of going for youth and upside and just a raw athlete.
Yeah, you know, I want to be clear about the draft too with this, because a couple things. First of all, I don't personally devote a ton of energy to the draft. Why? Because my job is to literally like deeply evaluate 30 NBA teams. So like it's impossible for me to do that and evaluate 75 prospects every single year. Same. So like I'm not here to be like, well, you should have drafted this guy, because I haven't done that work. And like, the guess what, the people who do that, they don't do what I do. They just do the draft. They spend year round digging into the each individual prospect and focusing on just that. So this is not, I'm not over here trying to say like they should have taken this guy or they should have taken that guy. The story of your draft success though is in the large sample. Like there is a certain amount of variability in every area of the draft, even the top. Like God, look at the Lonzo Ball draft. Like there's variability. You can make catastrophic mistakes with the number one overall pick. You know, Zachary Risache, I'm blanking on his name now, but the guy from Washington, the guard, the one who went before Tatum and Lonzo.
Oh, you're talking about Markelle Fultz.
Yeah. Thank you. Sorry, I rooted against him in the Pac-12.
I was thinking Washington Wizards and not college. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. But like, there's variability everywhere along the line. But the tale of your success is in the large sample. Like, if you have a good scouting department that is good at identifying good basketball players that fit your culture, you're not going to have a situation like the Lakers are in, where there's literally not a single player that they have picked up in any part of the draft since Max Christie that has been able to play in their rotation. Except Bronny and what he did against Houston, that's the first time.
Yep.
That's the first time.
That's insane.
And you got him because insane. Of LeBron. So you probably wouldn't have drafted him if it wasn't for LeBron. So like,
right.
The tale of the large sample for the Lakers is that their front office is not good at identifying talent in the draft. It's a large sample of a failure to find rotation talent there.
Let's bring this back around to put a bow on where we're at here. This is great. We bounced around a lot of different players here. We need to talk about Jake LaRavia next. But LeBron leaves. What happens to Bronny?
I think he's a Laker.
Let's say LeBron signs elsewhere in free agency. Then what happens?
I think he's a Laker. I think he's a good culture guy for them. He's on a cost control contract for multiple additional years. LeBron leaves and plays in Cleveland a year. Where is he going after that? LA. He's going back to LA. Bronny probably loves it in LA. Mm-hmm. And we talked earlier about how he kind of projects to be reasonably good at a lot of things that I think help this team. Like, I think Bronny's a Laker. And he's nothing like his dad. He's not a big personality that's commanding the room. He's just like a dude who goes in and does his job and has a good attitude. Like JJ Redick has raved about how him and the coaching staff have loved working with him. So like, I think Bronny's just a Laker, don't you?
Yeah, I think you're right. And we wouldn't have been there a year ago. A year ago, the conversation would have been, well, if LeBron's gone, you're probably freeing up that roster spot and moving on, right? But he is seriously grown and developed, and that's where I give him a lot of credit for the work that Bronny has put in. I do think that at $2.3 million, he's worth keeping on your roster and continuing to develop, even in the absence of LeBron James. I think he's somebody that you continue to invest in. All right, let's give a quick shout out to our sponsor here, and that is Prize Picks. You guys can check them out. Super easy to play. All you got to do is pick more or less than some of your favorite players. The link is in the description down below. The code is HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly. Jason, I've been leaning heavily into Steph Castle, 11.5 points. To me, that's just, it's the no-brainer. I'm going to continue to roll with that one. I'm assuming you have no objection.
Yeah, absolutely. There. 100% on board with that.
You see anything else that that particularly pops off the screen to you?
Man, Wemby's high. His point line is so high. I do think Wemby's going to be a monster, but that's high. Go with Towns over 14.5. I still really I think Towns just has beautiful matchups all over the floor.
Agreed. All right, we'll go there. If you guys want to get in on it, use the link in the description down below. That code is HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly. And a big shout out to Prize Picks for sponsoring the show. All right, before we get into some of our chat questions here, let's real quick have a conversation. We talked a little bit yesterday about Jackson Hayes and kind of his role when we talked big picture about DeAndre Ayton and that whole situation. So I don't know if we need to go in depth into him today, but what about Jake LaRavia?
Can I just give you 30 seconds?
Absolutely. Please do.
I thought he got better this year. I thought he got stronger. I thought he got better at defending with verticality without fouling. And frankly, for a dude who makes $3.5 million to be a guy who could like spot start and was better than the starter on many occasions, like I give Jackson an A-, and I think that he had a good season.
Yeah, I have no notes. That's exactly where I'm at on Jackson Hayes. I thought it was a nice season of development for him. And yeah, he's got that mind meld with Luka. The lob chemistry is real. And so I'm hanging on to Jackson Hayes if I'm the Lakers. And I think he's fine value as a backup big. I think you're pretty pleased with him as a backup, occasional guy that can take over the minutes in the fourth quarter when the matchup calls for it. So no issues with Jackson Hayes sticking around. Jake LaRavia, one of the offseason additions, signed for $6 million per year, two-year deal. So he's got next year on the books at $6 million. Had moments during the season where you started to wonder, okay, he got bumped into the starting lineup due to injury. Is he just going to keep that spot now where he played that well, where he was hitting shots and making plays and the hustle, the grit, the grind, all that kind of stuff, does work on the board, switchable defensive player, pretty good size for a wing as well. And then the shooting really fell apart and later on in the season to the point where JJ Redick benched him in the final two games of the season. In fact, the only two games in the entire season that he did not play were the final two games of the playoffs when JJ Redick moved him to the bench as his shooting woes just continued and he started to make mistakes. So kind of a tale of two seasons really for LaRavia, but where are you at on him for the season as well as moving forward?
I wanted to originally go kind of negative just simply because we talked about this during the season. To me, if you're only a one-way player and you're like in this case, just kind of like a defensive Swiss Army knife, can guard multiple positions, relative, not great at any specific position, but pretty good at all the positions, like not a great rebounder, but a good rebounder. Like he's just like pretty good at everything, but only on one end of the floor. That screams vet minimum to me. And so that was my initial gut, was to go negative, but I landed on B- because he just played every damn game and he played hard every night. And there's a certain amount of just like aggregate value over the course of a long NBA campaign that I think is worth giving him credit for there. The last piece I'll say with Jake is with his jump shooting. It was a miserable jump shooting season for him. Something tells me Jake's going to have a good shooting year next year. The shots that he got were all wide open. This is literally just like a, hey, Jake, go work on wide open corner threes all season, all summer long. These are far and away the best looks he's ever gotten in his career in terms of these wide open catch and shoot threes in the corner. I think he's capable of knocking them down, and I think he'll have a better shooting season next year. At that point, I think he could overperform his contract.
I agree. This was his worst, and Lakers fans will say, of course it was, his worst three-point shooting season of his career. He was a 42% three-point shooter on the season last year. Now, that's on a very low volume, 2.2 attempts per game. But three attempts per game this season, 32% from deep. He was 34% his sophomore year in the NBA with the Memphis Grizzlies on 4.5 attempts. So at the very least, I think he can be a league average shooter. I think he got into a nasty shooting slump. maybe like we haven't seen, I think it's this, maybe the second worst shooting slump in the NBA, second only to Tari Eason, who was, I mean, my God, his drop was insane in the second half of the season. But I do have hope that it was just a shooting slump and he can round back into form, really put in the work this summer on his shot. And if he can do that, if he can become a at least league average 3-point shooter on a $6 million contract, he's got a lot more value, I think, on the roster. And I'm not saying he's a starter, not saying he's your top rotation player, but as one of your top 10 guys, hopefully pushed more towards the latter end of that because you've added more talent to your team, I think he can be just fine as a versatile player. He's not afraid to hit the floor. He's going to do the dirty work. He's going to crash the boards and hustle on every single play, every single night. So I don't have a problem with him on the contract that he's got. I probably go like a C plus on him just because of how drastic the drop off was and how unplayable he was later on in the playoffs. But kind of going back to the Adu Thiro conversation about if I'm going to take a risk on a player, I think the Lakers have needed to invest more and take more risks on wings. And so I was happy to see them go land a wing player in Jake LaRavia that if he hits, we'll be able to do some things on both sides of the ball. Right now, the defensive side, certainly ahead of the offensive side of the game. But if the shot comes back, I think Jake LaRavia can be a fine rotation player for the Lakers. And again, I hope the shot does. If it doesn't, okay, then he's $6 million expiring for next year. And that's that. And then you move on. But if the shot comes around, I think he'll be a useful player for this team.
The thing that makes me optimistic is he shot better when he was guarded and when he was off the dribble this year than he was when he was wide open off the catch. Mm-hmm. And he was 32% on those unguarded catch and shoot threes. But if you go back through his career, his rookie year, 44% on the unguarded catch and shoot threes. His second year in Memphis, he was 37%, which again, isn't great, but a hell of a lot better than this year. And then the 2025 campaign in both Sacramento and in Memphis, he was over 50% on unguarded catch and shoot threes. So in his career, if you put every single unguarded catch and shoot 3-point attempt that he took before this Lakers season, he was well into the mid 40s. So like he is a guy that is that specific unguarded catch and shoot three and the skip to the corner, that was an outlier shooting performance for him this season. And like, mm-hmm. I just thought, to your point, he did so many other things well that if he could just figure that piece out, I think he's a guy that is like a legitimate rotation player at $6 million. And at that point, you've got to be ecstatic.
Agreed. All right, let's finish off the show with a few of our chat questions and comments here. If OKC said, take Joe Wiggins and Dort, would you do it? And off the top of my head, that's about $37 million in salary. So that's your cap space, essentially, just about, that would be gone. Would you do that knowing that your opportunity cost probably means one of LeBron or Rui isn't coming back? And even getting either one of the back would probably require a fairly stiff discount.
Okay, so let's talk this through. So in this case, you lose Rui. Yeah. Your starting lineup turns into Austin, Luka, Dort, LeBron, Ayton. Mm-hmm. Your bench then has Isaiah Joe, Aaron Wiggins, Jake LaRavia, Jared Vanderbilt, Jackson Hayes. You're in this
Marcus
position.
Marcus Smart could be in the fold if you can use the room exception. You could bring back like Marcus one Smart. Of Kennard or yeah. Smart could be in there.
And if you had Marcus Smart, yeah, you had Marcus Smart in there in that bench group instead of Jared Vanderbilt. Like then you have like this Smart, Wiggins, Joe, Jake LaRavia bench group. Like I'm just getting a bunch of good players for pretty much free there. I like if OKC's literally like just take these dudes into cap space, I think I would do that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think I probably would. I think these guys are better rotate. This is better depth than what you've got right now. Now is, I think the big key is, what does LeBron say when you go to LeBron and say, hey, we can get these guys, but it means you're going to have to play for X, whatever you've got left over. Does LeBron say yes, or does LeBron say no? That's going to be a big question there. But I do think you're upgrading your quality. I think these guys would all fit around Luka. The age range fits. I think this is the type of player you've been looking for, and you probably just go ahead and do it while understanding that that means that OKC keeps Isaiah Hartenstein. They're able to keep a number of other players. I don't think they shed quite that much salary. They might. But I'd strongly consider doing this, depending on what LeBron would say.
It's completely unrealistic. I'm just saying in yeah. this fantasy world where the Thunder say, hey, would you like to take, you know, three of our rotation players off of our hands, including our starting 3-and-D wing? I just personally would take him. I think people are a little too low on Dort right now after he had a rough series. Dort is a tough matchup in the San Antonio context, but like I like him. I like Dort better as a player alongside Luka anyway.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, let's check this out. I like, so Cam Johnson and the 26th pick in the draft for one of Dalton Connect, Jake, or Vando. So you're talking about saving the Denver Nuggets a bunch of money, effectively. So if we're talking about what, Cam Johnson's like $27 million, something like that. I'll pull it up right now here. And then you offset that a little bit with, let's say, $4 million for Dalton Connect or something. You're allowing Denver to, $23 million. I was a little bit high there. So let's call it minus $19 million in cap space, plus you get a first-round pick. I don't know that Denver needs to attach a first to Cam
Johnson.
Yeah,
if I'm getting Cam Johnson in a first-round pick, I'd do that in a second.
You
wouldn't be able to get me off the phone until the trade was finalized.
Yeah, I would absolutely do that. Would you, without the first, would you do it?
Yes.
Yeah, I think
I think Cam Johnson's a starting three in this league.
Yep, I think he'd fit well. Let's see. Rui comes back 100% with this new Lakers Daiso. I don't know how you say it. Sponsor. They can give him a $16 million average annual value and make him the new face of the sponsorship. Trees 2.0. We're gonna pay him to not plant trees.
I love it.
I think his average annual value will be a bit higher than that because you're talking about starting right at the mid-level there. And I think there will be any number of teams that will be more than happy to give Rui the mid-level. I think the Lakers will have to pay a little bit more than that, at least, to keep him. But it's a fair point when we talk about, you know, your international audience and having the access to that kind of a market and all of that. Certainly something that could matter. The press release for the sponsorship literally came out right as we were about to go on the air, so I have not read through it yet or seen any of the details on it.
I'm guessing it's their new t-shirt, their new jersey sponsor.
Like it's something. Again, I literally saw that the press communication came through right as we were, so I have not looked at. I just saw they've announced a new international partner.
Good for them. More money, more problems.
That's right. The business side of the organization, getting some things done. Valentino said, do you guys think Luka will be happy/stay after his contract if they do not make big changes this season because he's already getting older? So this is a point that I've been making, that it's not like it's tomorrow, but Luka can hit free agency in 2 years, 2028. That's going to come up sooner than we think. We're talking about what? Four cycles of significant transactions right around the NBA, two summers and two trade deadlines to potentially make moves that would cause Luka to stay. And even then, if we're talking about into the 2027-2028 season, you're staring down free agency for Luka that year. That could be a very uncomfortable year depending on what Luka is going to do extension wise and all of that. So what do you think about Luka staying long term in LA? Is it a foregone conclusion, or do you think there's a real world where Luka, things don't go swimmingly this summer and Luka's like, yeah, maybe I will take a look around in 2028.
I've said this on the show before, but I think it's just about the trajectory. I don't think Luka is under some delusion that he's going to go win six championships and that he needs to be like immediately surrounded by some urgent amount of talent because he needs to get one in the next 2 years. Like if Luka just had a decent chance to compete every year and he got one or two before he retired, I think he would be satisfied with that. So to me, it's just he needs to see the trajectory. He needs to see a clear, like, we are building towards this with every single cycle. And if they got to the end of that second year if they got to the deadline of that second year and he didn't see that trajectory, I could see that being where the pressure gets put on from his representation to try to make something happen.
All right, let's finish up with this. Love the show, inspiring my podcast. Well, thank you. Appreciate that. Lakers need three wings that can play high point of attack basketball. The playoffs are showing it. In terms of point of attack defenders, we talked a lot about the Lakers, how poorly they defended at the rim over the course of the season. They ranked 29th out of 30 teams in opponents' field goal percentage at the rim. That's not all on DeAndre Ayton. Some of that is point of attack defense, which struggled over the course of the season. Now, Marcus Smart did his thing. Jared Vanderbilt could have his moments. But yeah, I do think there needs to be more athleticism on the wings. And that's something that we've talked about quite a bit. Finding those guys is more difficult. And perhaps that does lean more into going after like a Lou Dort or somebody like that if he really becomes available. But finding those types of players is a challenge. But yes, ultimately, you need more wing depth. You need more athleticism. And you need more guys who can play a high-pressure style on the perimeter. We're seeing that become more and more commonplace in the NBA. And those teams are finding success, and particularly finding success against the Lakers when they're having to play against that style. So I guess the question is, can they land the pieces they need this summer with so many teams in the NBA looking for stylistically exactly what the Lakers need?
Yeah, it's easier said than done, but ultimately in the same way that Cat and Brunson are surrounded by three really good, versatile defensive players that can do a lot of different things on the floor. Like I was amazed by OG Anunoby's, just his dig downs and recovers last night. And we've thought about him as an on-ball defender against maybe Castle or against Wemby, but it's like, no, he spends a lot of time on Fox and he just does a wonderful job off the ball. You need these versatile kind of do everything defenders between your two stars. And then you need your two stars to do their jobs. Do I think Austin and Luka will do their jobs? Yes, but you have to craft small enough jobs for them. And the only way you can do that is if your 3, 4, 5 are just monster versatile do everything defenders.
Yep. That's it. All right. Let's wrap things up there. We made it through our player grades. Had a good time talking through these ones. Now we've got, the next iteration of the Lakers is going to be assembled in short time. I would imagine by our next show next week, we're going to have, I think there'll be a little bit more buzz about what the Lakers are going to do that I'm sure we'll be diving into. But Jason, I think we successfully held down the fort while Jovan was traveling here, and we should have all three of us back for our shows next week.
Yeah, you know, Jovan had a hamstring strain, a grade 2. He's going to be out for a while. But, you know, we just slotted up into bigger roles and we just took care of business and we pulled off the upset and we lived to fight another day.
Moving on. Love it. All right, everybody. Appreciate all of you for joining the show. Make sure you do hit that subscribe button. Turn on those notifications as well. Thank you, everybody. Till next time. Last one. I give Jovan a B- for availability. The best ability is availability. You know what, though, Jason? We've talked about this a bunch behind the scenes. We're all going to have... I've missed a few shows. Yes. You've missed some. We're all going to have shows over the course of the summer that we're gonna need to miss. It's just the way it is, and we will fill in and step up and make sure that we figure out ways to get it done.
Exactly. Take one for the team.
Exactly. All right. Thanks, everybody. Till next time. See ya. And stay safe.
Good show.